Welcome back to another episode of the Victorian Farmer Federation's Horticulture Group Hort Thoughts podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to connect Victorian food producers with expert advice, knowledge, and information on key topics relevant to the horticultural industry. I'm your host, Tegan Buckley, and in this episode, we are talking supply chain disruptions with Andrew Whitelaw from Thomas Elders Markets.
You're going to be planting a crop with expensive inputs. You've got to be assured that you're going to your output, the cost of your wheat or bananas or whatever it may be, is going to recover the costs of doing that, plus a bit of profit as well. We all need profit.
Andrew Whitelaw started his career in the UK working in the animal feed and biofuel sector before relocating to Australia. Since 2010, Andrew has worked in the Australian grain industry in a number of different roles, most recently as an independent analyst.
Primarily what I do is I provide advice and write reports on agricultural markets, whether that's wheat or canola or fertilizer or fuel. We take a lot of data and then we use a bit of our experience in agriculture to then sort of write reports that farmers or anyone else in agriculture can read and hopefully get a good solid understanding of what is happening.
Andrew co-hosts a podcast on agriculture called Ag Watchers as a hobby, which you will also hear about him talk in this episode. Welcome to Hort Thoughts. Thank you for jumping on board this episode.
No, thanks for having me along. Always good and up for a chat with anyone. So thanks for inviting us.
Oh, fantastic. So first up, can you give us a rundown on who you are and what you do?
Primarily what I do is I write about agricultural markets. You know, we see these markets with a lot of volatility, prices go up, prices go down. What I want is the farmer to hopefully, as they get more understanding of the markets, they don't get a surprise. They don't wake up one morning and think, oh, why is the price of X at this level? They learn over time, a bit like on a weekly basis, you sort of check the footy scores and but you don't have to be looking at it every single second. So there's that side. My partner and I, business partner and I, we also run a podcast on the side, and I'll give that a plug. It's called Ag Watchers. It's called Ag Watchers, and we basically have a very, very jovial, very sort of non-serious chats with people in agriculture, from people developing, you know, robotic ways of trading in Argentina to, you know, politicians. So a big wide range of different sort of people as we chat to, basically just if we find it interesting, we think, well, hopefully other people find it interesting. And then the third bow is I'm also got a commercial pig farm on the outskirts of Bendigo. So makes me sound like I'm really busy, but it's I've got plenty of time.
So. Oh, fantastic. No, we're very, very fortunate to have you on board to chat with us in this episode about disruptions in the supply chain. So let's kick that off. What do you think is driving fert higher?
Look, it seems like a complex sort of thing. I've heard a whole bunch of ideas from it's the Beijing Olympics to, you know, various sort of things. It's the Illuminati causing it to change. But the reality is that it's energy prices. We have just gone through a period over the last 4 months where energy prices have gone through the roof. So the price of coal has went to record levels in China. And the price of gas has went to record levels in Europe and really high levels in the USA. So you might think, well, why is that important, the price of coal? Well, the reality is that synthetic fertilizers, the biggest input into the production of those is energy. It's a highly energy intensive process. In Europe and the USA, they use natural gas. In China, they use coal. What happens when you have a high coal or gas price is that the price of fertilizer has to go up because the input to that is expensive. So what we've found is record high energy prices means high fertilizer prices. But what it also causes is sort of secondary impacts. So you might have read in the news that China has banned the exports of fertilizer. The reason they've banned the export of fertilizer is because is a flow-on effect from our energy price. Locally in China, fertilizer prices have gone sky high. Chinese government is always very keen to make sure they've got food security really strong. They want to make sure that the people are fed. When you've got 3 billion people, you want to make sure you've got food. So what they effectively said is, if we ban exports, then the producers of fertilizer in China will only be able to sell to the domestic market, which will mean the price will fall. So Chinese farmers will be able to get access to fertilizer. As all you farmers are listening will know, if without fertilizer, you have lower yields. Whether that's organic or synthetic, you need something to add fertility to the soil. So what China's trying to do is ensure that they have food production by ensuring that farmers still continue to use fertilizer and hopefully get good yields. So what that does, though, is you have a big supplier like China out of the market, which means that the globally available supplies of fertilizer become diminished. So, but really, that's a secondary factor. The first factor is the high energy prices. All these other things are sort of ancillary to what actually is the driver, and that is gas and coal. You know, and I think, you know, it's just one of those things where we see this every now and then, and it's again, it's almost political as well. Like in China, one of the reasons that they've got high energy prices is the fact that they've banned Australian coal. Because they've banned Australian coal, they have to buy from other suppliers. But those other suppliers are not quite as good a quality coal as we have in Australia. So you have to burn more to get the same amount of energy, which means your energy cost goes up. So it's one of these things of, you know, those...
It's an interconnecting system, isn't it, of supply, demand, and yeah, everything seems to be connected.
And what happens, though, is you're perfectly right. And the biggest problem we have is not necessarily the supply and demand and the interconnected of it. It's when governments get involved. When governments get involved, there is this sort of issue where there's unintended consequences. So China bans Australian coal, and then 6 months later they have high fertilizer prices, so they ban fertilizers to the rest of the world, which then makes the world fertilizer price go up, which potentially has, theoretically and logically, has the impact that food prices around the world will go up, which means China has to pay more for their imports of food. So I think a lesson for governments around the world is just stay out of markets. You know,
and it was that easy.
and if farmers say, oh, we need a minimum price for milk or a minimum price for whatever else, it will end in disaster. It always does. I don't think there's been ever a time when governments intervening in markets helps. In the end, it always ends up pretty, pretty poor.
I guess what's sort of the outlook? What can sort of farmers take from this information to support them with decisions?
Look, I think it's really tough. Like, I think the next couple of months is going to be really tough because farmers have got to get the calculator out, get the spreadsheet out, and work out, well, at these prices, what can we afford to do? Can we afford to continue placing fertilizer on the ground at these really high levels? And we've modeled the prices in recent days. So it's, you know, really we're talking about a price delivered to Australia of above $1,400 a ton. So bearing in mind that the average, this is for urea and DAP, roughly $500 a ton on average for the last couple of years. So we're talking nearly three times as high.
Yeah, okay.
So that means we've got to really be sort of planning, working out what you need. If you're a cropping farmer and you've got an area of the paddock that is just not very good normally, well, maybe you shouldn't be putting anything in that field. If you're a horticulture, maybe you've got the same. Maybe you've got a row of trees which doesn't produce all that much. So why put the investment into that when it's so high for fertilizer? We've just got to be more selective, I think, this year. But I think the big problem is, we talk about fertilizer, but almost everything else is expensive.
Yeah, so that would lead to the freight costs. That's probably on farmers' minds at the moment. Shall we venture into this area?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, well, freight is the pinnacle of everything. Everything is pinned on freight. Mm. Everything that we that we receive in the country, from fencing goods to, you know, inputs, comes from overseas. It comes on a bulk vessel or it comes in a container. One of the issues we have is that most of that stuff comes from China. That's just the reality of the world we've built over the last 20 years. And if we look at, say, container prices, if you're trying to get a container out of China, we're talking $10,000 a box and above. If you're trying to get a container into China, it's like $1,000 a ton, $1,000 a box. So we saw this situation where getting containers of stuff, and whether that's a widget or a whatever it may be, out of China is going to cost you an absolute fortune, which has to get passed down the line. And that is the concern that we have, is that those shipping costs have stayed inflated for a long period of time, and they're way above normal. You know, we're talking 3-4 times higher freight prices. Yeah. But then we look at other costs. You know, if we were to say, right, what are the costs a farmer has? Fuel, record levels or highest levels in 15 odd years. Chemicals, you know, glyphosate, highest price since 2008, at least. Labor, well, you're going to talk about that in another podcast, I believe.
But oh, yeah.
Labor's expensive. You know, if you want to get staff, you can't pay award wages. You've got to pay above ward if you can get staff. And I imagine that's a massive issue in horticulture with no backpackers available. Fencing. Price of wood has gone up for the roof. So if you're buying boxes to, you know, put your potatoes in those boxes or whatever it may be, they're more expensive. Steel, more expensive. Land values, if you're buying more land, really expensive. It's a tough environment. And in economics, we talk about this sort of cost price squeeze, where we're producing something and we're getting a price to produce that, yeah? But then we've also, on the other hand, got the input costs. And I'm not sure if there's that many commodities and agricultural products where the price that you're getting for producing that product is keeping up with the cost of actually producing it. And so we have this sort of cost price squeeze, which is a real big challenge. And agriculture's faced it for a long time, but this is the hardest it's been since at least 2008. And it's really quite tough.
Yeah, it is. But there's plenty of support out there for farmers listening in. Are there any go-to resources that you can recommend off the bat in terms of dealing with, I guess, disruptions in the supply chain and how to sort of work around that?
Look, it's a really difficult one. It's like, I'm not sure what resources really are. But to me, it's a case of being informed.
Yeah.
Knowing what is happening, because that's the big issue is, you know, the fertilizer thing has been going on since July.
Yeah.
I'll give a plug as well, but Thomas Elder Markets, .com.au, has been putting out reports on how fertilizer prices are high and increasing in price since July, at least. That's completely free of charge. So you wouldn't wake up in December saying, oh, why has it gone so high? You know it's gone high. So being informed, I think, is first and foremost, and takes away the surprises.
Yeah.
But B, I think just planning. You know, we can't just sort of look at it and say, right, let's just do what we normally do because it'll be right. It'll be right. Well, it might not be. And this is the risk we've got is, and I'll talk more from a cropping point of view, but the same in horticulture, you're going to be planting a crop with expensive inputs. You've got to be assured that your output, the cost of your wheat or bananas or whatever it may be, is going to recover the costs of doing that, plus a bit of profit as well. We all need profit. That would be lovely.
You
know, a bit of profit's nice as well on top of that, but it's going to be harder and harder. But I think the only saving grace at the moment is we're in a period where a lot of agricultural products are doing quite well. And are receiving good prices. There's quite a lot of demand. COVID is, you know, some commodities, even if you look at things like cheese demand has gone up. Meat.
Canola prices.
Canola prices, fish and chips will be expensive soon. And it just comes down to that thing of, that's there just now. But we all know what markets are like. And there's an old saying, high prices are the cure for high prices. And if we look in the past and, you know, those who don't look at history are doomed to repeat it. 2008, we saw this really sharp swing in you know, fertilizer prices, fuel prices, and grain prices, for instance, followed that. But then within about 12 months, the price was back down to a low level. So that's the risk, is the timing issue between buying your purchases of your inputs and selling your outputs. You could end up, you know, purchasing high and selling low. That is a risk that we take. What we really need in Australia, and it sounds bad, is for us to produce a good crop, but the rest of the world to produce a shocker. And tough luck to them. but a lot of those countries, you know, if we look at the US, even if they have a drought or an issue, they're largely insured anyway.
Yeah.
So that's what we really need. And it's sad to say that, but that is the reality. It's
bad, but it's true.
Well, we need something to go wrong in the rest of the world to give us the opportunity to maintain good, strong prices. The risk we have in the next 6 months is the rest of the world produces good crops, good horticultural produce, and then supply increases. Because what if everyone decides to plant every acre they can to products? Well, it'll mean extra supply. And that's all it comes down to, whether it's fertilizer, whether it's, you know, outputs, it's supply and demand. It's agriculture is the most simplistic market ever. It's supply and demand. You produce too much, prices are low. Produce a little bit, prices are high.
So. Absolutely. So when will we start to see things return to normal? And the million-dollar question, what will normal maybe look like now in this world? Any insights there?
Look, I think traditionally markets all tend to revert to average.
Yeah.
We're actually, as a society, when I'm talking about a global society, we're pretty good at producing things. And we're pretty good at producing a lot of things. And we're pretty good at keeping up with demand generally. So if you look at historical over time, prices stay pretty flat on everything. But then you have these big spikes when there's a supply issue. So spike, flat, spike, flat, spike, flat. And so I think the new normal, and people use this term and it scares the bejesus out of me, is when people say, this is the new normal. The prices can't go down from here. But we've heard it on every commodity, you know, saying prices can never fall below this level. And inadvertently, that basically is the sign that things will fall.
It tends
to happen, but because we saw people talking about, you know, timber, there's a super cycle in timber and price of timber will never fall from here. That was back in March and they completely collapsed from April onwards. Markets are markets. They will just find an equilibrium between supply and demand. I think one of the issues we have in all markets at the moment is things are a bit messed up because of all that COVID stuff. You know, we've got disruptions everywhere, which really does cause, you know, a big issue of things are not really working the way they should. Supply chains aren't working. So there's a lot of demand, which is not necessarily real demand in my view.
Yeah, okay.
I think we'll return back to a more normal period, but it's going to take time. Like if we use fertilizer as an example, it's energy. Energy is what is going to bring it down. When energy prices decline, we'll see fertilizer decline as well. Fingers crossed, touch wood, provided the savings in energy are passed on. But that's a discussion for another day. But even at the moment, we can see that, say, in the last month, we've seen some declines in gas prices and coal prices. So there is a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak.
Positive, yeah.
The problem is it's not going to be, it will be reflected in the fertilizer price, but not this week, probably not next month, probably a couple of months' time, if not. Most projections, most analysts in the fertilizer space are probably middle of next year, which is probably not a lot of goodness for farmers in Australia who generally buy the fertilizer January through to March.
Yeah.
Probably going to be too late for us, but at least.
Maybe the following years. Yeah.
Maybe the following years, and maybe hopefully we. Again, return back to relatively low pricing levels.
Yeah, I've got my fingers crossed.
Well, we can only hope.
Yeah, stay positive.
There's another old Scottish saying. I think it's Scottish at least. It's depressing, so it's probably is Scottish. Is hope for the best and plan for the worst, and that's all we can do.
It's a good one to live by. Well, to wrap up this episode, I'm going to finish on a question, a bit more of a personal question. What do you find most rewarding about your role?
This sounds a bit sort of funny, but I just like, I guess, puzzles and problems to an extent. Yeah. And I like the truth. I've been always like to think that the truth is everything in what you say and what you do. I work with data. Data is the ultimate truth. And so when we write something, I'm in a very lucky position in that I'm completely independent. I have an independence charter with myself, my colleague who does livestock. We write what the data tells us. There's no person telling us, oh, write this, write that. It is verbatim what we believe it to be, plus whatever the data is saying. So I enjoy that. I enjoy the ability to sort of interpret data and then come up with a story, and hopefully, you know, at times add a bit of humor to it.
Yeah.
But I think the key thing for me is that I like turning something that's complex into something that's ultra simple, because I think our industry has been struggled with an issue of inadequacy to an extent. And a lot of people, especially from a markets point of view, probably more so than an agricultural, from a markets point of view, everybody wants to discuss markets in an ultra complex manner. They want to use as much jargon as possible. And, you know, to me, that's the person trying to make themselves sound clever, as opposed to trying to distill the information into a simple form where it's readily available. Like, I would like to think that if somebody reads my articles who has no knowledge of agriculture will get it.
Yeah, fantastic.
And that's my aim. You don't have to have, you know, 4 years of an economics degree to read an article, and you shouldn't. And also it should be short. And I probably, in written form, I like to keep it short. And as you probably, the listeners are realizing, in the spoken form, I tend to waffle on. So it's
it's fun.
that's what we tend to go for. So that's what I enjoy, whether it's
long-winded. No, that's excellent. I really enjoy just wrapping up episodes, hearing the good things that our people in ag find within their roles. And thank you so much for all the work that you do and for joining us on this episode. Are there any final words of wisdom to wrap up this chat?
Let's just hope, you know, the weather is beneficial to us over the next year. And look, that's the main thing anyway for Australian farmers. It's not fertilizer, it's not fuel, it's weather, and it always will be weather. So touch wood, fingers crossed, with La Nina, it doesn't flood, but hopefully we get enough rain.
Oh, thank you so much, Andrew. We'll chat soon.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please be sure to share it with others, post about it on your social media, or leave us a review and a rating. To catch all the latest from the Victorian Farmers Federation, head on over to vff.org.au for more info. Thanks again. See you next time.